Informing America's farmers and ranchers. This is AOA, produced by the American Ag Radio Network. Now, here's your host, Jesse Allen.
And thank you for joining us here for AOA, Agriculture of America. Great to have you along with us for another conversation about issues impacting farming, ranching, and rural America. I'm your host, Jesse Allen. Today's program brought to you by Cenex. Downtime's a waste. Keep your equipment running smoothly by using high-quality Cenex premium diesel fuel. Learn more online at cenex.com. Coming up on today's program, we're going to have a conversation with the president of the National Cattlemen's Beef Association, Mark Isley of Wyoming, later on in the show. He is in Washington, D.C. this week for their spring legislative conference. We're going to talk to Mark coming up here after the bottom of the hour. Also in segment two, we're going to hear part of a recent conversation I had with Tanner Emke from CoBank, looking at the expansion of soybean crush here in the U.S. and maybe some of the risk of an overbuild. We're going to get to that conversation coming up here in just a little bit on the program as well. First up, though, let's not waste any time kicking things off here on AOA today. He is the CEO of the National Association of Wheat Growers. Chandler Gould's with us here today on the show. And Chandler, it's been a while since you've been on AOA. It's great to have you back, sir. Hope you're doing well.
Absolutely. I always appreciate being on your show and looking forward to our conversation today.
Well, let's start. I know you spent some time in North Dakota here, I believe, last week, getting a look at some of the maybe the early spring wheat planting, et cetera. Give us some thoughts on your trip to North Dakota last week.
Absolutely. So the leadership from the National Association of Wheat Growers, as well as the leadership from the National Wheat Foundation, we held a three-day meeting in Fargo, bringing our leaders in from also Minnesota, Montana, and South Dakota, to do media training and parliamentary procedure training, and you know, so that we can continue to grow our leadership skills among our board members, but then also to visit the largest production state, which is the state of North Dakota. We also met with some of their growers. We met with the North Dakota Grain Growers Association executive director, joined us one evening for dinner, and then traveled up to Grand Forks to the mill up there just to look at the different processes and how things were going. But all in all, things were looking pretty good, and we were thankful to be in North Dakota and to meet with the growers from there and the states around.
Well, I'm sure with getting so many folks together, probably a lot of great conversations over dinner on the side. Have to think that maybe Farm Bill was part of some of those conversations, Chandler. Of course, we're still waiting on a new Farm Bill. There's chatter we might have House text out of committee by Memorial Day, et cetera. You're there in just outside D.C. and in D.C. a lot. What's the latest you're hearing in terms of this Farm Bill, Chandler?
Well, so while we were in North Dakota, we actually had the former chairman of the House Agriculture Committee, Colin Peterson, join us one evening. And of course, he is closely tied to both the Democrats and the Republicans, being such a bipartisan member when he was in the House. And you're right, we're still waiting on a farm bill. We have definitely seen signals from Chairman G.T. Thompson on the House side that we should expect tech sometime in the month of May. I think, though, actually being able to get it out of the House Agriculture Committee is definitely going to be possible, but getting it across that House floor, especially today when you saw more headlines of possibly ousting the Speaker again, it's just really becoming almost time crunch, impossible to get a farm bill across both chamber floors, conferenced, and to the President before it expires again. But we do commend the House Ag Committee for working on their bill and the Senate. They're both working very hard on it. I'm just not 100% sure that we're going to see a finished bill in 2024, and we're probably looking at another extension.
What are some of the priorities from the wheat growers' side here? I mean, as we look at, I know there's a lot of contention between the nutrition side versus things like reference prices, crop insurance, et cetera. What are some of NOG's priorities with the farm bill, Chandler?
So, you know, if you look at the cost of production since 2018 to 2024, there has been a significant increase, whether it's from crop protection tools or fuel. We've also had to deal with, we're still dealing with, you know, with COVID supply chain issues. And then, of course, you had inflation, which I think goes back to both the current Biden and the Trump administration of a lot of the payments and money that went out there. So when you deal with all of those and you look at the Title I, the safety net. Is it truly a safety net? Like for wheat, our PLC price is $5.50. And when we did a survey across all six classes of wheat and all the growers that we represent, I mean, really, really break even is around $6.75, $6.80. And so we're not looking for a farm bill that's going to guarantee a profit. We're looking for a farm bill that's a true safety net. And $5.50 just simply does not meet that criteria. Of course, continue to support a strong crop insurance program, making it robust, maybe even be able to figure out how to make higher coverage premiums more affordable, voluntary conservation programs. And of course, we want to see a doubling of MAP and FMD funding so we can continue to push and develop those markets for U.S. wheat.
Well, I know a lot of things though tied in with that farm bill. Another topic that's been a hot one in D.C. as of late has been the Climate Smart Ag initiatives from the Biden administration. And I know that when it comes to wheat growers, you know, a lot of wheat growers in the country already do a lot of these type of conservation practices. Talk to us about some of the wheat growers' perspective on Climate Smart Ag and maybe getting a little more consistency in some of those USDA rewards, Chandler.
So ever since the administration and the USDA has come out with their climate smart programs, wheat you would think would be very much at the top of them. You know, we use less water. There's fewer passes over our commodity. You know, we already are a climate smart commodity. But the problem that we're running into is 70% of the wheat grown in the United States is winter wheat. So it's in the ground. It's a living root. It's a living plant. And it qualifies as a cover crop, but because we harvest that crop the next year, we have not been eligible for any of the Climate Smart programs that have come out for the USDA, and we weren't eligible for many of the other grants that some of the larger companies and commodities like corn and soy were able to participate in, because we have to harvest our cover crop. And so we have spoken to the Secretary and to Undersecretary Bonney directly multiple times. They're aware of the problem. Chairwoman Stabenow's office is aware of the situation, and we're trying to find a solution so that our wheat growers can get the credit, just as you said, for the things that they're already doing, but also for the fact that we have a living plant in the ground all winter long. Even though we have to harvest it, there should be some way for our farmers to get the credit for that. For that climate smart activity that they're doing in their production cycle.
It's all, you know, with everything we're trying to do with climate smart and the initiatives, it's you know, a lot of great work, but also kind of figured out how some of the puzzle pieces fit together. Right, Chandler?
Absolutely. And, you know, wheat is always special. I have no problem saying that very publicly. We grow 12 months out of the year. We grow in spring and summer. And we grow in six different geographies. And so if you write programs, whether they're from the USDA or if you're legislating them in the Farm Bill, if you write them so they work for corn and soy only, it will not work for the wheat industry, just because we are just that much different that you're going to have to look at what are the implications and practicabilities of programs when you're rolling them out. So does wheat need a little special attention here? Yes, we do, because we're still the third largest commodity. And we want to participate, and we want the credit for the things that our growers have been doing and will do.
Well, we could have probably went another 20 minutes. We're up against the clock, though. Folks can learn more at wheatworld.org. With that, the CEO of the National Association of Wheat Growers, Chandler Gould. Chandler, thanks for joining us on AOA. We'll get you back on the show again soon.
Absolutely. Thank you for the opportunity.
All right, coming up next on AOA, brought to you by Cenex. We're going to talk about the expansion of soybean crush with Tanner Emke from CoBank on the way right after this.
AGCO is proud to launch PTX, a new leading brand that aligns precision ag technologies from Precision Planting and PTX Trimble. Two familiar brands with one common goal. Precision Planting and PTX Trimble know farming is easier when systems speak to each other. That's why they provide solutions that connect operations across the crop cycle to unlock visibility and flexibility, regardless of equipment color. Through automation, guidance, and upgrades for every season, PTX is your solution for precision ag technology, empowering you to be more efficient, more accurate, and make agronomic decisions with confidence. You'll find a local dealer network that provides expert knowledge and support for every season. As you focus on maximizing yield, they'll provide reliable service, education, and access to tools that strengthen your inputs. Innovative brands you trust, powerfully simple, seamlessly compatible. PTX. Visit PTXAg.com to learn more.
Paid non-attorney spokesperson. Are you over the age of 60 and been diagnosed with lung cancer? If so, you and your family may qualify for a cash award. Our experienced attorneys are standing by to evaluate whether you have a lung cancer claim that qualifies you for a cash award. The consultation is absolutely free, and there is no risk and no money out of pocket. We only receive a fee when we secure you and your family a settlement. 250,000 people are diagnosed with lung cancer every year. You're not alone in this battle. We can help make sure that you and your family are financially safe and that medical expenses are covered. Again, if you've been diagnosed with lung cancer and are over age 60, call now. Don't delay. There are deadlines for filing claims. We're standing by 24/7. Call us at 1-844-903-1744. 1-844-903-1744. That's 1-844-903-1744.
Attorney Advertising. William Stephacker Jr. is the attorney responsible for this ad. Main office, Granton, Pennsylvania. May not be available in all states.
If you're caring for one of the 16 million Americans living with chronic obstructive pulmonary disease, you probably have many questions. COPD makes it harder to breathe and worsens over time. As a caregiver, you may juggle many roles. Being connected to the right resources can help. That's why the Learn More, Breathe Better program and Respiratory Health Association created the COPD Caregivers Toolkit. This free toolkit will help you better understand the disease, prepare for doctor's appointments, navigate home life changes, help after a COPD flare-up, and stay mentally and physically healthy through it all. Help your loved one live better with COPD. Visit nhlbi.nih.gov/COPD-caregivers.
Keeping America's farmers and ranchers informed. AOA. Now back to Jesse Allen.
And welcome back to AOA, brought to you by Cenex. When the temperature goes down, so can your equipment. Cenex Premium Diesel Fuel is built with a balanced additive package to keep equipment moving. Learn more at cenex.com. Well, last week on the Market Talk podcast, I sat down for a conversation with Tanner Emke, lead grains and oilseeds economist at CoBank. They recently authored a new report looking at the potential of an overbuild in soybean crush capacity and what that could mean for the industry. Want to take a listen back to most of that interview right now here on AOA. Some really good thoughts. First up, Tanner kind of sets up the premise of the report for us here, is that interview and conversation with Tanner Emke from CoBank.
Yeah, well, we worked with our customers that are building in the space, and there's always been this talk about what you talk about, the risk of overbuild, because so many of us lived through the ethanol buildout it's a short time ago, but it seems like yesterday, but it's been over 15 years now, in the late 2000s, and everyone's calling this ethanol 2.0, mm-hmm. that we're going to see the same thing happen in soybean crush, like we saw in ethanol, where the space was overbuilt. You had a lot of undisciplined capital come into the marketplace. Farmers didn't have deep enough pockets for some of the ethanol plants that they invested in. You had some outside money that is not accustomed to the swings in commodity markets that came in to invest in ethanol, and the space quickly got overbuilt. And we saw so many of those plants, unfortunately, get liquidated at pennies on the dollar. And now everyone is thinking that's exactly the same thing that's going to happen here with soybeans or with soybean crush. We have a similar, we think something similar may happen, but it's not going to be the same. First of all, the balance sheets of the folks that are building out the capacity in soybean crush are very, very strong, Jesse. After a couple of years of record large, crush margins over the last couple of years, balance sheets are healthy, and we just don't see the likelihood of a correction happening this year or next year. On that note, I do want to point out crush margins have come back really in a big way over here this past year. And we have now come back to something that is closer to the historical norm. And so that inevitably is going to mean that that's going to have a negative impact on the ability for a new plant to cash flow. These new plants, remember, are built at a much higher cost than plants of in the past. The borrowing costs are significantly higher. The raw material costs for concrete, for steel, for aluminum, all those raw materials are sharply higher. You have labor costs are sharply higher. So to build a new plant today is no longer going to pencil at the low level, at the crush margins that we had in the past. Mm-hmm. And so now the question is, okay, if you did build a new plant at these sharply higher costs, how long can you last at a crush margin that is now come back to earth? The crush margin of today is not what it was a year ago. And so that starts this question of, okay, who is going to be rationalized? What assets are going to be rationalized? We don't think that's going to happen here first in the United States. We do think it's going to happen, but we think it's going to first happen in Argentina. That's where you've got a lot of crush capacity that has been idled over the past year because Argentina had a terrible crop last year. Mm-hmm. And those crushers down there are struggling. At the same time, there's a new government down there in Argentina and is contemplating raising the export taxes on soybean product exports, specifically meal and oil. And that would be a terrible headwind for those crushers. So they are the ones that are the most vulnerable at this point in time. Okay. You're not going to see crush capacity idled in China. They're going to make sure that those plants where most of the soybeans are crushed in the world are going to remain operational. They want the beans and the meal and the oil and the jobs. We don't see Brazil coming offline anytime soon. Same thing there. Their balance sheets are strong. And of course, like I talked about here in the United States, our balance sheets are very strong. So the most vulnerable crushers really, Jesse, are down in Argentina. That doesn't mean we don't have risk.
Yeah,
there are some plants, as we point out in the paper, that we would be concerned about. It's going to be those plants that are called destination plants, the ones that are located outside of your main soybean growing regions that are going to rely on transportation to import soybeans to their local area. And that's another layer of cost, another layer of risk. Because transportation costs can be volatile. They can rise on you. So there's another layer of risk there for destination plants. We're concerned about plants that are in areas that are experiencing some overbuild, where you're going to have crush capacity in a small area or a local area where you're going to have plants bidding against each other for soybeans. And then what happens if we're in a short soybean year and you have an export bid show up from China? All of these things now are going to be working against those plants that are already in competition with each other. And so their basis is going to be reflecting that. And their cost of soybeans is going to be much higher. That's an obvious win for the farmer. But for the crush plant, that's another layer of risk. And so we talk about that in the paper. Those are really, in the U.S., those are the two areas that we'd be concerned about. And of course, management is important. What is the quality of the management? Who is the money behind the plant? Mm-hmm. Okay. Are they disciplined capital? Do they understand the cycles that we experience in agriculture? Are they patient capital? Do they know that we have these boom and bust cycles? And during the bust cycles, are they ready to stand there firm and deep, reach into their pocket and pull out more money? You know, are they going to be there? How deep are the pockets and how deep is their patience? Really, is the question really? So those really are really the three things that we outlined in the paper is where are the plants located? What is their local competition for soybeans and who is behind the plants? Are they disciplined capital and do they have the capital behind them to carry them through low margin periods?
Tanner, another piece that I don't think is talked about a lot here, but I'm curious your thoughts on this. What about competition from imports of other vegetable oils, palm oil, canola-based oils from other countries. I think that's another piece that we have to consider here as well.
We addressed that in the paper about the risk to the crush margin. You can, if you haven't been watching the news, we've got record imports. Vegetable imports of all kinds are flowing into the United States. Canola oil imports are record high, and Canada is building out their crush capacity to meet the rising demand for veg oils. And so we can anticipate more canola oil flowing in from Canada in the years ahead. Palm oil flowing into the United States at a record large amount to backfill the demand for veg oils in the United States that's left vacant by soybean oil. Palm oil is not supposed to be used for renewable diesel because it would contribute to the destruction of rainforests in Southeast Asia. But at any rate, those imports are record high and flowing into the U.S. Then you got used cooking oil, very controversial there, coming in from China. Is it actually used cooking oil, or is it just palm oil that they heated up and they're able to capture that credit by selling it to the United States as a processed or a used cooking oil? So those imports are record high, and that's competing with soybean oil processed here in the United States or crushed the soybean oil created here in the United States. And that's depressing soybean oil prices, and that's going to be impacting the crush margin. And that's ultimately going to be flowing down to the processor bit in your local area. But right now, you know, as expansion continues to grow in the United States, there's a positive story here, I think, as renewable diesel demand continues to grow. That's going to put upward pressure on demand through this growth period for all veg oils, soybean oil included, and that's going to put a firmer floor under veg oil prices. That's the short-term view here. Remember, we're not the only country, Jesse, that has a renewable fuel program. Mm-hmm. You got Southeast Asia doing their own programs. You got Brazil doing their own programs. Other countries around the world are going to be pulling veg oils off the market. So over time, you're going to see that demand for veg oils continue to rise, not just here in the United States, but around the world. That's going to create scarcity, and that's going to create higher prices.
And you can listen to that full conversation with Tanner Emke from CoBank on the Market Talk YouTube channel. Just go to youtube.com/@MarketTalkAg. All right, coming up next on AOA, brought to you by Cenex. We're going to have a sit-down conversation with Mark Isley, the president of the NCBA. He joins us next on AOA. Join us every Tuesday for Around the Table, brought to you by CHS, as we examine how the modern cooperative system solves today's biggest challenges. We'll be talking to CHS experts and farmers and ranchers just like you, and we'll learn how cooperatives apply innovation and technology to help co-op owners get more value every day. Join us Around the Table every Tuesday, or visit cooperativeownership.com to learn more.
Make sure to subscribe to the Market Talk YouTube channel. You can watch our latest interviews with top market analysts in the country, find bonus content, and much more. It's easy. Just go to youtube.com/@MarketTalkAg and hit the subscribe button. Or you can search for Market Talk Ag on YouTube.
Get the latest bonus interviews, exclusive content, and more with the American Ag Today podcast. Just search for American Ag Today and give us a follow wherever you get your podcasts.
You're listening to AOA. I'm Jody Heemstra with this check at agriculture markets from the American Ag Network. Corn, Tuesday's precipitation moved through the northern plains and northern Midwest, including Iowa. It's now around Wisconsin, Michigan, and Ontario. The moisture is expected to clear out by Thursday, followed by cooler temperatures in the northern Corn Belt over the weekend. A warming trend next week is apt to allow planting activity to increase from the south. Later today, the U.S. Energy Department will have its report of last week's ethanol production, likely another active week as plant margins remain favorable. In spite of active corn demand, December corn prices remain pressured by larger supplies in the 2023-24 and the harvest of Argentina's corn crop. Soybeans, November, are getting more bearish influence from the vegetable oil sector. That after an impressive rally in February and March, but June palm oil prices have seen a retreat of demand in seven of the past eight sessions. Monday's report of a record high soybean crush in March is good for soybean demand, but is also resulting in a buildup of soybean oil supplies that are pressuring soybean oil prices lower. July Kansas City wheat is staying paralyzed in its narrow sideways trading range, not willing to trade any new lows, but not having strong enough support to make new highs either. Tuesday's precipitation in the Western Plains will be helpful to spring and winter wheat conditions overall, but the moisture didn't offer much help as far south as Kansas. Oklahoma and Texas will have chances for rain this weekend, and the drier side of the southwestern plains has chances for rain in the 8 to 14 day period, a less confident forecast period. Cattle futures may begin to chop sideways as traders begin to look ahead to the upcoming cattle on feed reports on Friday. Trade estimates for placements have a much narrower range of expectations than the past few reports. That's a check in agricultural markets for the American Ag Network. I'm Jody Heemstra.
Adopt U.S. Kids presents What to Expect When You're Expecting a Teenager, Learning the Lingo.
Today I'm going to help parents translate teen slang. Now, when a teen says something is on fleek, it's exactly like saying, that's rad. It simply means that something is awesome or cool. Another one is totes. It's exactly like saying, totally, just shorter. As in, I totes love going to the mall with Becca. Another word you might hear is jelly. Jelly is a shorter, better way to say jealous. As in, Chloe, I am like so jelly of your unicorn phone case.
You don't have to speak teen to be a perfect parent. Thousands of teens in foster care will think you're, rad, just the same. To learn more, visit AdoptUSKids.org. A public service announcement brought to you by the U.S. Department of Health and Human Services, AdoptUSKids, and the Ad Council.
Informing America's farmers and ranchers. AOA. Now back to Jesse Allen.
And welcome back to AOA, Agriculture of America, brought to you by our friends at Cenex. Their premium diesels and premium lubricants will keep your operation running here during a busy spring planting season and really throughout the year. Those hard work, long hours, and extreme conditions, they're not new. Cenex Premium Diesel and Premium Lubricants meet the demands of today's toughest engines. Premium Diesel and Premium Lubricants and Grease to keep you going. Learn more online at Cenex.com or trust your local experts at your nearest Cenex location, which you might be able to find right around the corner. All right, well, joining us now here on AOA, we'll have him with us here for the rest of the show today. We're going to be talking about the beef checkoff, some of the attacks against the checkoff, public lands issues, and more details of the spring legislative conference happening in Washington, D.C. this week. He is the president of the National Cattlemen's Beef Association, Mark Isley from Wyoming. Mark, thanks for joining us here on AOA. Appreciate the time. Hope you're doing well.
We are. It's a pleasure to be here.
Well, let's dive in, and really a lot of things I want to talk to you about today in regards to the beef checkoff and NCBA and a lot of different topics that we want to cover some ground here. So let's just start and maybe give us your thoughts and a nice refresher for folks on how the NCBA is a valuable partner to cattle producers. I think that'll kind of set up our whole conversation here today.
Absolutely. You know, the reason NCBA is so valuable to the producers is we're where they need us to be when we have to be there. We're in places like D.C. We're in the state houses. Wherever it is that we can access the regulatory agencies or anybody who has any say in our daily operations, we've got people there. I can't afford to. Most producers can't afford to travel to those agencies, spend time at meetings. But NCBA can do that, and they always show up with sound science. They're knowledgeable, and we're really credible, and we're incredibly credible. And that is so powerful for people who are actually looking for the truth. They want to get to the bottom. They want to find out what the nuts and bolts of operations are. So That's one of the reasons we're so valuable. We can be there when they can't be.
Well, and that's a great point, because obviously there are no shortage of attacks against the checkoff, things of that nature. And I want to talk to you about that a little bit here. There's been a lot of chatter and concern really over the last couple of years. This has kind of come back around again, these attacks against the beef checkoff, and a lot of folks questioning, you know, where the money's going, et cetera, et cetera. And a lot of it coming from animal rights activist type groups. I mean, talk about some of that for us, Mark, and just your perspective on things like the OFF Act, et cetera, and all these different attacks against the beef checkoff.
Well, you know, my family's been involved with promotion for a long, long time. My wife did it decades ago when we were first married. And I come to realize early on how important that was to producers and how important it was to consumers. And we fine-tuned that product where consumers love it now, and that's great. We've also protected our markets. We've done a lot of things with education. We're teaching dietitians and agencies who make those decisions on things like school lunches, you know, medical professionals, that sort of thing. So first of all, we're telling good, credible information that everybody can use. The producers, I prefer actually to call them activists, who don't understand the checkoff, they've twisted some of those facts around. In fact, some of them are just flat out distortions. It's not a tax. It was passed and voted on by membership and producers decades ago, in 1985, if I'm correct. And so it was a self-improvement, self-assessment. Almost every industry has it, everything from avocados to Christmas trees. And we're no different. And that's how you develop and maintain that market and educate your consumers. So the folks that are pushing the OFF Act, well, first of all, they're not animal agricultural lovers. They have a different axe to grind. They have an agenda. I think the real agenda for many of them is to put us out of business. And even some folks within the industry would rather have it their way and injure the industry than relent to what is actually taking place. It's a great program. It has checks and balances throughout the system. It has audits that are constant and compliance officers that oversee that. We know every dollar is spent all the time. And for those, and some of them are quoting like an audit that's 14 years old that had some discrepancies. Those have been cleared up. Let's just get that off the record and let people know that that's been taken care of. And now they have checks and balances throughout that whole system. It's available online, the Cattlemen's Beef Board, USDA oversees that. I'm very comfortable with where it's at and where it has been.
And I know, too, just to kind of add to that, it feels like the OFF Act or some iteration of that, this is not a new thing necessarily. These challenges to the checkoffs have been happening now for many, many years. It just seems like this is something that doesn't go away, these challenges out there against the checkoff, Mark.
Well, you know, and it's not just about the checkoff. There are folks who genuinely don't like animal agriculture, don't understand its role in economies, especially local economies, and how that intertwines with people's livelihoods. Some of them are activists, and they're just in it to make a living. They go where the money goes, however they can source that money, get donors, and basically pay their own salaries. And some of the worst ones, the majority of their money goes to their own administrative and salaries. There's some giant golden parachutes out there for some of those people who are making a living opposing what we do for ours.
I want to switch gears and topics with you here a little bit and talk about some of the various federal lands regulations we've seen over the last few years. I know your ranch, obviously, you're in the West, you're in Wyoming. You've had to deal with a lot of these different federal rules impacting certain public lands, grazing, things like that. Talk about some of your experience dealing with some of those issues and maybe frame this up for some folks in the ranching community who haven't had to deal with some of these public lands issues, Mark.
Oh, absolutely. Well, a lot of folks aren't interested in the Western public lands and how that grazing works. I have private land and I'm not affected by it. Well, what they don't understand is that the federal lands are basically a testing ground. And the activists that's the, I mean, the animal rights, or you know, they just don't like public grazing, or whatever the case may be, don't understand that at all. But what we do understand is that that is the testing ground for anything that they're wanting to try. They start out with public lands. They start out with those grazing rights. Pretty soon they move the issue to water, private property rights, all the different things. So what that means is it's a progression where they, if they can take us, so to speak, they will be on your doorstep to get something from your private property. They will want you to give up something and for the benefit of all. But the reality is it's self-serving. So the public lands are, a lot of them are lands that were, they could not homestead. They were not successful. The government's tried this equal distribution thing before. It was a disaster. Most people abandoned their homesteads and they consolidated into larger pieces or larger parts so that they could actually be viable and sustainable with folks who live there. Some of those lands, nobody wanted. That's why the government ended up taking them over. And the way they were needed to be managed, and folks say, well, how do cattle grazing or sheep grazing work on that? Well, it's the same activities that say the bison did, but in a better, more managed scenario. And so that's why it's critical. And those are also the headwaters for everything else. Everybody loves clean air, clean water, you know, open spaces. And that's where it starts. And you protect the ranches and the farms that have that by protecting their public lands, because that was the first thing where they sourced water. And that's some of the best habitat for wildlife and other birds, in addition to livestock.
Well, I know, too, that's where key relationships come into play, such as the NCBA and the Public Lands Council, to help fight against some of the different regulatory challenges that are out there that affect a lot of those public lands in the West, Mark.
Well, that's absolutely true. You know, the agencies that oversee so much of what we do, Bureau of Land Management, U.S. Forest Service, Fish and Wildlife Service, EPA, I could go on and on with alphabet soup with all the agencies, but this is how NCBA helps our producers. We interact with those folks. We stay current with them. We find out what they're planning for regulations. If we can, we comment, try to help them make the regulations work, make them livable for us, and actually benefit the resource. I think we all want to see the resource protected, managed well. That's it. And when they bring something bad forward, we're also in a position to say, this is where you should be and why you shouldn't go here. And a lot of times we're the only voice, and I genuinely believe we're the only credible voice that does that well. There's some other ag organizations, but for as far as large animal livestock grazing, we're it. And I think what we do is really good. And the way we do it is really good.
All right. Well, once again, we are having a sit-down conversation here today with Mark Isley, the president of the National Cattlemen's Beef Association from Wyoming. And we're going to continue our conversation coming up here after the break. I got a few more things that I want to talk to Mark about, specifically thinking about folks getting into farming and ranching, barriers to entry, some of his ranch legacy and more, as we kind of have a sit down coffee type conversation here with Mark. So we're going to continue that coming up here after the break on AOA, brought to you by Cenex. Not all grease created equal. Cenex premium greases are made with high quality ingredients to provide durable protection. Learn more online. Just go to Cenex.com or visit your nearest Cenex location for more. We'll be back with Mark Isley from the NCBA on the way right after this here on AOA, Agriculture of America.
Teachers are dynamic leaders, shaping a new generation. They bring a variety of perspectives from diverse backgrounds, innovating how they teach to prepare students for our fast-changing world. Achieving this takes skill and expertise. They're tireless explorers, creatively discovering a universe of solutions, telling stories, experimenting, inspiring, mentoring, connecting cultures, and connecting with each other. leading by example. Experience the unique joy of helping students thrive. Teaching is a journey that shapes lives. Are you ready to begin? Explore teaching at teach.org, a campaign supported by the U.S. Department of Education, teach.org, and 1 million teachers of color.
Over the years, you've brought them into your home. You were prescribed opioids after the C-section, when Dad injured his back, when your basketball star tore his ACL. Opioids helped with the pain, and you held on to them, just in case. But did you know holding on to unused opioids puts your family at risk? Opioids are powerful pain-reducing prescription medicines, but most people who are prescribed opioids don't finish their prescriptions. So millions of unused opioids are sitting in homes across the country. And tragically, more than 100 Americans die every day from overdoses involving opioids. What can you do to protect your family? Remove the risk of unused opioids from your home. Pills, patches, or syrups in drawers, purses, and cabinets, anywhere they might be hiding. To find out how to dispose of them properly, visit www.fda.gov/drug disposal.
AGCO is proud to launch PTX, a new leading brand that aligns precision ag technologies, from Precision Planting and PTX Trimble. Two familiar brands with one common goal. Precision Planting and PTX Trimble know farming is easier when systems speak to each other. That's why they provide solutions that connect operations across the crop cycle to unlock visibility and flexibility, regardless of equipment color. Through automation, guidance, and upgrades for every season, PTX is your solution for precision ag technology, empowering you to be more efficient, more accurate, and make agronomic decisions with confidence. You'll find a local dealer network that provides expert knowledge and support for every season. As you focus on maximizing yield, they'll provide reliable service, education, and access to tools that strengthen your inputs. Innovative brands you trust, powerfully simple, seamlessly compatible. PTX. Visit ptxag.com to learn more.
Every day, our brave military men and women, along with their families, make tremendous sacrifices for our freedom. Patriotic Hearts, a nonprofit organization, is dedicated to supporting these heroes and their families in their times of need. By donating your unwanted card to Patriotic Hearts, you'll be supporting job transition and job fair programs, veteran entrepreneurship, counseling, and retreats for combat veterans and their spouses. Call 800-560-3870. You'll receive a tax deduction, and we'll arrange a free pickup at your convenience. Imagine the difference you can make in the lives of those who have given so much for our country. Your card donation will directly impact military families, veterans, providing them with the support they desperately need. Call 800-560-3870. You can become a part of something bigger. Join us in our mission to uplift and honor our military community. Call 800-560-3870 to donate your unwanted card.
When news happens in agriculture or when the markets are moving, we've got you covered as your trusted voice in agriculture. The team at the American Ag Network has the knowledge and experience to keep you informed on the issues impacting farmers and ranchers. We've got you covered on air, online, and on demand. Find the American Ag Network on your favorite social media platforms and also follow the American Ag Today podcast wherever you get your podcasts. We are the American Ag Network.
Make sure to subscribe to the Market Talk YouTube channel. You can watch our latest interviews with top market analysts in the country, find bonus content, and much more. It's easy. Just go to youtube.com/@MarketTalkAg and hit the subscribe button. Or you can search for Market Talk Ag on YouTube.
Get the latest bonus interviews, exclusive content, and more with the American Ag Today podcast. Just search for American Ag Today and give us a follow wherever you get your podcasts.
Keeping America's farmers and ranchers informed. AOA. Now back to Jesse Allen.
And welcome back to AOA, Agriculture of America, brought to you by Cenex. Downtimes and ways to keep your equipment running smoothly by using high-quality Cenex premium diesel fuel. Learn more at Cenex.com. Jesse Allen back with you. Mark Isley, the president of the National Cattlemen's Beef Association, is my guest here on the show today. Talk to me a little bit here, and I think this can kind of help us guide towards the end of our conversation today, but you've obviously spent many years, your family, building such a good ranch legacy on your home farm there, your home ranch in Wyoming, and thinking about just all the different issues that are out there, the regulatory challenges, et cetera, thinking about what's going on in Congress right now. I mean, how can lawmakers in DC, how could Congress support producers like you to try and make sure that that ranch stays in your family for generations to come? I mean, talk about that a little bit, Mark.
Well, you know, it's difficult to get into ag sometimes anyway, especially on a large scale. It's a high investment, sometimes low return, but the folks who do it, we love what we do. We love the land. We love the landscape. So we're really the front lines of people who believe in sustainability. That's absolutely rock solid true. I genuinely believe that. But the agencies make it difficult because they don't understand those changes make things unmanageable or very difficult to manage. Predators, apex predators are a great example. It's pretty tough to keep the factory running when somebody's eating your inventory. And that's not a great analogy, but it works because large predators are a problem. Taxes are enormous. The death tax, estate taxes, but I call them death taxes, are an enormous burden. Sometimes grandpa worked his whole life, father worked his whole life, and the son can't make that final payment, or the daughter, so everybody's that's involved. And what ends up happening is they end up having to sell it, subdivide it, or walk away from it because they can't afford the taxes. How many times does a place have to be paid for by a family before it finally is theirs? In the IRS's mind, apparently never. Just keep paying and paying and paying. And that burden continues to grow, and they expand it. They want to tax your inventory. And our inputs are so high anyway. They want to tax your every input you have, your fertilizer, your fuel. Pretty soon, it's almost insurmountable. So that's where NCBA plays such an important role in slowing that pace. And we don't have time to read the Federal Register every day to see what's new coming up. That's what NCBA can do for us. So looking out for the benefit of the producers, benefit of the country, benefit of the resources. I can't emphasize that enough. I'm really proud to stand with them and represent them when I can.
You made a point there at the beginning too. I'd love to maybe follow up with just a second here as far as how tough it can be for folks to get involved in ag. What are some of your thoughts on young producers and some of the barriers to entry, some of the challenges they have if they don't have a family succession plan, so to speak? I mean, some ways that maybe NCBA could help young producers who want to get into cattle ranching.
Well, that's great. You know, there's a lot of things we do. We work with land-grant colleges. We work with ag educators, extension, some of the resource management agencies, and we try to make opportunities possible. We also work with some of the banking industry to give some folks, young folks, and I was one of them. I started out with almost nothing, but I got a banker to listen to me. He gave me my first loan. We built on that. I started out with a niche business. I was actually stacking hay, which was really labor intensive, but it was very productive. I used that to buy more cows, rent more land, so on and so forth. There are some opportunities out there, but you got to be creative. I think in this day and age, especially with the internet, you can do things. You can market beef. You can market services. You have some ability to do things that were never obtainable before, and you can reach a broader audience. So there's some possibilities. I mean, if we can keep the regulatory agencies from taxing us or forcing us out with unnecessary rules that make little sense or have real value above and beyond maybe a tax collection, we can get younger producers in. And we need to make sure we have those resources, education, whatever available to them to help them pursue that. It can be done, and we need more of them, especially when we're seeing the age continue to grow and have some transition problems. I think that's one place NCBA can help. If the agencies are not fighting us and the officials aren't fighting us on that. And I say the word fighting, I don't think they realize how that opposition looks from our, sometimes we feel like we're a little bit under siege and we just have to get past that.
Well, as we wrap up our conversation here today, kind of circling back to how we started talking about how NCBA is a valuable partner to cattle producers. I know NCBA, you guys have your legislative conference happening this week in Washington, D.C., and I have to think that the value of having cattle producers like yourself in town, in D.C., meeting with elected officials here this week is so, so crucial, isn't it, Mark?
It's a great get-together. The Legislative Conference and the Public Lands Council, when we come in here and they see the hats in the halls, and we'll have over 300 producers that represent, you know, 25,000 plus of our members, 300 of those people walking the halls, talking directly to their members, talking to the committee people. It's very powerful. They're real stories about real people and what happens with their real livelihoods. And they know that we're telling the truth. We're telling boots on the ground, you know, stories that they can relate to. And they can see how those rules, those laws, those regulations affect us, either good or bad. And that's a powerful message, and it's a great opportunity. So I'm grateful for the producers who take the time to come and speak. So it's a great week. It's a good time. Everyone should come to D.C. once in a while and see how things work.
Well, with that, really appreciate the conversation and the time. The president of the National Cattlemen's Beef Association, Mark Eisley. Mark, thanks for joining us here on AOA. Always good to chat. We'll talk to you again real soon. Appreciate it.
Thank you very much. Appreciate it also.
And with that, we are out of time here on today's AOA, brought to you by Cenex. Not all grease created equal. Cenex premium greases are made with high-quality ingredients to provide durable protection. Learn more at Cenex.com. Thanks to Mark. Thanks to Chandler Gould with the National Association of Wheat Growers for joining us as well. And that full segment with Tanner Emke from CoBank, you can watch it on the Market Talk YouTube channel, youtube.com/@MarketTalkAg. Coming up on tomorrow's AOA, we'll have a conversation with Mike Nagy, the Iowa Secretary of Agriculture, also Chelsea Good, VP of Government and Industry Affairs at the Livestock Marketing Association, will join us. I'm Jesse Allen. Have a great rest of your day.
Non-attorney paid spokesperson. Could your house go into foreclosure? Are you behind on your mortgage payments? Does it seem like the bank has no interest in helping you save your home, and you feel like you have nowhere to turn for help? Then we have good news for you. Foreclosure Protection Services can help save your home, as they specialize in foreclosure assistance. That's all they do. If you're behind on your mortgage payments, being threatened with foreclosure, have been denied a loan modification, or been the victim of a predatory loan, it's critical that you call Foreclosure Protection Services now at 800-926-1701. Their network of attorneys and their agents are available to speak to you now. If you're behind on your mortgage payments, Foreclosure Protection Services can help stop the foreclosure process. Call today before it's too late. New laws are in effect that may save your home. Call Foreclosure Protection Services now at 800-926-1701. 800-926-1701. That's 800-926-1701.
You can't escape a traffic jam. Know what else you can't escape? Seasonal allergies. And you might think you can avoid that coffee stain until... Oh, really? You can't escape a lot of things in life, but you can escape prediabetes. Prediabetes captures 1 in 3 adults. There are usually no signs of prediabetes. In fact, most people don't even know they have it. But with early diagnosis, you can change the outcome and prevent or delay type 2 diabetes. Take action by taking the 1-minute risk test at doihaveprediabetes.org. You might not be able to escape having this song stuck in your head, but you can escape prediabetes. Go to doihaveprediabetes.org today. Brought to you by the Ad Council and the Centers for Disease Control and Prevention.